from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, PG&E announced on Tuesday that it intends to close the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. What will this mean for energy in California and for the future of nuclear power? And can renewables take the place of nuclear energy, or will more natural gas and a greater generating of CO2 emissions be the result? And what about the cost to you, the consumer, the possible effect on your electricity rates? We'll take all of that and more up in the hour ahead, and we'll hear arguments from both sides. It's coming up next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Tuesday, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, announced that it will close the Diablo Canyon Power Plant, California's last nuclear plant, in 2025. Located near Avila Beach in San Luis Obispo, the closing of Diablo Canyon will mean the end of a half century of atomic energy in the Golden State and the shutting down of a plant with earthquake faults around it, which contributed to the beginning of the anti-nuclear movement. A number of conservationists and others want Diablo Canyon to remain open because of its free of greenhouse gas electricity. And in this forum hour, we focus our attention on the proposed closing of Diablo Canyon and what it means for California, the environment, and nuclear energy. We want to go first to our own Lauren Sommer, who is here in studio with a science and environment reporter for KQED Public Radio. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi, Michael.
Well, what do you think is behind this decision? There's a lot of talk about they're doing energy efficiency studies and wanting to go to renewables and so forth, but how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a fight that's been going on for years now. The question was, should this plant relicense, right? The end of its license was 2024-25, and should it keep going another 20 years? And this is a plant with a 40-year-plus history of contention and controversy for a lot of different reasons. And so there's been a lot of debate over the last few years about whether PG&E would keep it open or not. And, you know, this announcement, I think for those of us that covered it a long time, was really kind of strange and remarkable. I mean, you had Pacific Gas and Electric announcing this with groups that they've been fighting with for years. And here they are kind of together to announce this joint closure plan with renewable energy. So it was a lot of different reasons contributing to this, but it was a really strange moment this week for those of us who know this issue.
It's a historic moment in many ways, one has to acknowledge. But they're also talking a lot about investing in solar and wind and storage and clean energy, as opposed to what some are afraid of, and we'll hear that probably in the course of this hour, they're going back to fossil fuels.
Yeah, what they said is that they're going to replace all this electricity, and it's a lot of electricity for Pacific Gas and Electric customers. This is about 20% of the electricity that serves them, with things like energy efficiency, solar, and wind, so that it's not replaced with something like natural gas, which puts out fossil fuels. That's their plan, but they've put down on paper at least. And the precedent for this is the last closure in California of a nuclear plant, which was the San Onofre Generating Station. And that one closed really unexpectedly. There was a problem and a leak that was going to be very expensive to fix. And so what ended up happening is they had to replace a lot of that power with natural gas. That was the precedent that everybody's been kind of afraid of in this case, because you're getting fossil fuels from that, whereas nuclear power isn't emitting fossil fuels.
And they're also, though, saying that the renewable prices have been going down, and especially photovoltaics. So they believe that that will continue?
Yeah, I mean, this really kind of points to just how much California's clean energy policies have changed the landscape here. I mean, it's remarkable that renewables have come down in price so much. I mean, this was kind of inconceivable that a utility could say, no, we think it's going to be actually affordable to use renewables instead of a fossil fuel source. And so, you know, it's really pointing to just the massive shift that this state has seen in its really ambitious climate change and energy goals.
The fact of the matter is, though, it still needs California PUC approval to take effect.
I think that's the big flag here. You know, this is a plan on paper. It's an agreement to replace at least some of the power with greenhouse gas-free sources. The rest of it PG&E has said that they still need approval from the regulators, which is the California Public Utilities Commission. And they said because they need approval, you know, they can't say exactly what's going to happen. So a lot of people will be waiting to see what the regulators say, whether they fully support this plan, whether they have other concerns. It's still a big question mark.
State Lands Commission also is talking about a new and pretty costly environmental impact report from the plant, really for the plant as part of this renewal process.
Yeah, we're not sure what's going to happen with that now. I mean, what Gavin Newsom is on that commission, and he had been saying because this is an agency that has to renew this permit that's going to expire pretty soon in 2018, and that's because some of the infrastructure of his plant is right on the coast on state land. And so Newsom had been saying that he wanted to see a full environmental review, but now that we're seeing that this plant might close, we don't know what the commission's going to do, whether they may just extend the lease that they need to extend just through the end of the life of this plant. That happens next week, actually, at a meeting.
We're talking to Lauren Sommer, science and environment reporter for KQED Public Radio. We'll get into a full-fledged debate about Diablo Canyon shortly, but I just want to ask you, Lauren, while I have you, what's going to happen with the rates? I mean, the head of PG&E says no higher rates, but they've got costs in decommissioning the plant, and PG&E is talking already about raising rates to make up for that shortfall.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is also still a question mark. And what PG&E has been saying is that, you know, they've been collecting money all along for the decommissioning process, so they expect to have enough for that. But they still need to do a full study about what that's going to involve and how much it's going to cost. They're saying at least, you know, in terms of the renewable, they have to already get 50% renewable energy. That's a state mandated goal. And so this was already something that PG&E has been planning for. But there may be some associated costs with working those renewables into the grid. And so we'll see before state regulators what they're asking for in terms of many added costs having to do with this.
Again, Lauren Sommer here with us in studio is our KQED Public Radio science and environment reporter. We also have Damon Moglen with us. He's senior strategic advisor for Friends of the Earth. Welcome.
Michael, nice to be here with you.
Good to have you with us. And Michael Schell. Schellenberger here with us as well, president of Environmental Progress and Environmental Research and Policy Organization. He's also co-founder of the Breakthrough Institute. Welcome, Michael Schellenberger.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you both. Damon, let me begin with you. Lauren mentioned Gavin Newsom, and he said this is really a low-carbon green future. A lot of excitement, a lot of talk about this being a win-win, and certainly those who have been involved in concern about nuclear power plants and nuclear power in general seem to be quite happy. But let me get your thoughts about this, particularly in terms of whether there. I mean, you're pretty confident that there's going to be a pretty fair and open hearing, a proper hearing in all this?
Absolutely. I think that this is a really historic agreement. And I think that what we see here is effectively a nuclear phase out in the sixth largest economy on the planet, driven by renewable energy and efficiency. And I think it's going to be seen as a blueprint for the replacement of fossil and nuclear plants around the country and really around the world. There is absolutely going to be a full public debate about this. There's going to be an opportunity now to take this proposal to lay it in front of the whole array of potential stakeholders and folks with concerns. And in turn, I think we're going to be looking for a dedicated proceeding before the Public Utility Commission that has to really decide whether or not to implement this historic agreement and to procure all of the renewable and efficiency resources that we're asking for.
But you know, there's been a lot of concern about that commitment to renewables, whether it can really be brought off or brought into fruition.
Well, I think, you know, we have to recognize, as Lauren was saying, that there's just been a massive shift. We're basically in the middle of a renewable and energy efficiency revolution. The fact of the matter is that in many ways, PG&E is making this decision as an economic one. The fact is renewables and efficiency are less expensive. And the best thing to be doing with Diablo is to close it down. Doesn't make sense to keep operating it. But beyond that, a huge issue is that we're also really dealing with an evolutionary shift in that baseload power, the kind of power that Diablo Canyon provides, is actually an impediment to increasing renewable energy. According to CalISO, already, because we're running the nuclear plant, we can't bring in as much solar during the day as we would like to be. So the fact of the matter is that as part of driving increasing renewable and efficiency in the state and doing that in order to address climate change, the plant doesn't fit. So it's costly and it doesn't fit. And that's why I think that the PUC is absolutely going to see this as a win-win situation. It's going to be cheaper and it's going to be better for our climate policy.
And you see it, Friends of the Earth and other organizations that have been behind this as a blueprint for other states?
Well, absolutely. I think not only other states, but around the country, around the world, I think. I think that, you know, in 10 years ago, the German nuclear phase-out was really seen as a remarkable development and was proof that we were going to be shutting down nuclear. And I think things that really strike people is that this one really moves in an even more historic direction, and then it's going to be replacing nuclear with all renewables and efficiency, and we're going to have a completely greenhouse gas free portfolio. And that's what we need to address the climate change problem.
And again, Damon Moglen here in studio with us as Senior Strategic Advisor for Friends of the Earth, and Michael Schellenberger, President of Environmental Progress, is not quite as sanguine. In fact, quite the contrary. You see this as a disaster. I think that's a appropriate word, isn't it?
Well, it's a fraudulent proposal, and it will fail because of its fraudulence. You have to understand that the main group that negotiated this, the Natural Resources Defense Council, has multiple conflicts of interest. It's directly invested. It has over $7 million directly invested into renewable energy companies that could benefit. It's directly invested in natural gas companies that could benefit. And in fact, just 2 weeks ago, just before the announcement was announced on June 16th, the vice chair of the Board of Trustees of NRDC bought a solar farm in California that is in a power purchase agreement with PG&E. The ties between NRDC, natural gas frackers, and renewable energy companies goes very deep. I just documented it on our website, Environmental Progress, for readers who want to take a look. I did it because on Tuesday, when I was briefing reporters, I was asked, because Sierra Club, of course, has taken money from natural gas companies and has advocated the closure of nuclear plants, which have been replaced by natural gas. Sierra Club currently takes money from solar companies that would benefit from Diablo Canyon's closure. Other environmental groups, including the most influential group in Illinois, is taking money from natural gas companies while it's lobbying to close nuclear plants. I was asked on the call whether or not that was the case for NRDC, and I said I did not know. I had never looked into it. So I decided to look into it, and what I found astonished me. So the CPUC is an organization that has struggled with corruption over the years. It lost its last president, its last chair, due to a corruption scandal with one of the utilities relating to a nuclear power plant. The conflicts go deep with all the entities here. I've only looked at one of them now. So I think CPUC will reject this because they need the reliability that Diablo Canyon provides. I think people in their heart of hearts are going to choose a future of cleaner air and a better climate than succumbing to their irrational superstitions around nuclear power.
What about the notion, though, that we often hear? I mean, you've made a case here for concern about a fix being in, or you call it fraudulent and special interests and so forth. But they say this is an American Fukushima ready to happen because it's nuclear.
It's just, I mean, it's like the anti-vaxxers have taken control of the energy policy in California. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't sugarcoat it any more for you than that. Every major scientific journal looks into mortality and morbidity. There's no mystery on any of this. Nuclear power is the safest way to generate reliable power we have. If you don't believe me, just Google Lancet, the British Medical Journal, and energy and mortality, and you'll find that.
But you also say there will be more explosions, there will be more air pollution, more power outages, higher electricity rates too.
There's no question. Look, this announcement was timed to distract attention from a criminal trial for PG&E executives who may have been involved in activities that led to the deaths of 8 people, to the destruction of 38 homes. What was that natural gas line doing? It was transmitting natural gas for electricity. So after Damon and his group shut down San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant, something like 50 years before it needed to get shut down, what happened? California went from being dependent 61% on natural gas to 45% to 61% natural gas. If Damon and his colleagues succeed in closing down Diablo, we're going to go to 70% natural gas.
You're not only mad at Friends of the Earth, though, you're also mad at the union.
I mean, look, how can
1,500 workers losing their
jobs? This union just negotiated killing 1,500 high-paying jobs, skilled jobs. I'm talking about scientists and engineers, but security guys, welders, amazing, amazing guys that have sacrificed a big part of their personal lives to work at that plant. The union is going to get them all out of jobs. They are what's going to happen? Those jobs, because we're going to move to natural gas. So what's going to happen is that billions of dollars from our economy are going to be transferred from California to billionaire natural gas frackers in other states who underpay their workers, whose workers are paid one half to one third what Diablo Canyon workers are paid. How can any union, how is that even, I mean, just forget about the legality of it. What is the ethics of a union agreeing to do that to good green jobs in California at a plant that could run for another 50 years? I mean, it's just... Yes, I'm upset about it because, frankly, we don't allow the anti-vaxxers to get their way in Sacramento, but somehow we allow groups like Friends of the Earth, Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, and Greenpeace, who have absolutely who the hypocrisy is sort of astonishing.
Let me go back to Damon Mogdon. Damon Mogdon, you've heard a lot of things here about.
I think it's really unfortunate that we're here to have a conversation about the future of energy and instead we're hearing a bunch of ad hominem attacks. And I just want to say something also, I think, for full revelation. You know, Mr. Schallenberger is primarily funded by the Pritzker family, who have a very radical pro-nuclear position. He doesn't represent the membership organization or anything like that. And I'd like to just read you from an article of the Pritzkers. They write, and in quoting
this is the same,
quote, expert,
Pritzker family with Penny Pritzker, Secretary of Commerce.
Well, this is no, Rachel Pritzker and Roland Pritzker. Mm-hmm. And they wrote, quote, "It is important to understand that the risk of health from radiation from Fukushima is negligible and that undue concern over any possible health effects would be much worse than radiation itself. The fact is Mr. Schallenberger is just flacking for the nuclear industry."
That's a lie. He just lied on air.
And that what we really need to be having here is a conversation about the future of energy. This agreement, which has been agreed to by people throughout the policy community and throughout the scientific community, is a blueprint for how we can shut down dirty fossil fuel plants and dirty and dangerous nuclear plants and replace them with renewables and efficiency. That's the conversation we need to be having.
But we've had this conversation before about – I mean, let's put all this aside about the charges, the ad hominems and everything. Right. Nuclear energy, there are many people who say we need it because it's clean and look at France.
Well, I think having lived in France for many years –
we need it in our portfolio. Let's put it that way.
Well, having lived in France for many years, I think we have to also look at the history of the French nuclear system, which is that they built a mono industry based on a technology in the 1950s, and they're now riding the tiger because basically what they have is a single mono industry. So in France, actually, what you have is a situation in which they have to climb off that tiger. We here in California are in a very different and very much better situation. We have the opportunity with our renewable mandate to be driving towards a 50% renewable mandate because it's going to be cheaper, safer, cleaner, and better for the climate. And what's interesting about this agreement, for example, is the PG&E is committing to go beyond that 50% renewable mandate, 55% by 2031. So this is an absolutely historic phase-out agreement, absolutely historic phase-out agreement, which is driven by renewable energy.
Michael Schallenberger, I want to go back to you, but you're also saying you're going to get more greenhouse gases because of reliance upon natural gas.
We're also
going to get ocean acidification.
Absolutely. I mean, let's start with so many different lies that Damon just said in their press release and what he just said. It's incredible. So let me just start with the first one. He claims that this agreement is going to result in 100% renewables replacement of nuclear. That's not what the proposal says.
I believe it says 51%.
I didn't see what
it says.
So
the public relations of Damon's organization and the other, and NRDC and the other, says that they're going to replace Diablo Canyon with 100% clean energy. That is a lie. The proposal
calls for – Can I get Lauren to comment on that? I've not seen 100%. I've seen 51%, Lauren.
They're saying that Diablo itself, the power that it makes, will be replaced with 100%. But then their whole – if you look at all of the energy that PG&E produces, they're going to go to 55%.
55%
down from.
Really,
you just had a chance
this,
to speak for really a long time.
About this,
May I
what's really point? Important about this is
yeah,
that
let him let Michael Schallenberger
didn't actually get to say anything. So the proposal actually, what it does is it says that we'll replace Diablo Canyon, which is 17,500 gigawatt hours, with 2,000 gigawatt hours of renewables, and that we'll get some energy reduction demand of 2,000 of efficiency. That's it. Everything else is just, we're going to try, we'll do our best. And what it has in the proposal that's most important is very strong cost containment language. So any of the stuff that Damon wants to do that's extremely expensive is going to run up against increasing rates, which is the CPUC's main priority. That's the first reason it's just going to fail. The second reason it's going to fail is because of the conflicts of interest. If this thing actually – if these guys actually get it through the CPUC, the lawsuits are going to be unbelievable. I mean, I have to say the thing that's so striking about it is just the risk that they will put people at out of superstitious beliefs. Natural gas is actually far more dangerous than uranium. And if you don't believe, just look at San Bruno. I mean,
and where does water come into this, an ocean acidification for you?
From the higher carbon emissions that will result from replacing Diablo with gas and possibly out-of-state coal too.
So let me just to kind of put this put this in context for people. This debate about whether natural gas will replace some of this power, here's where it comes from. You know, solar and wind really only work when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, right? And so right now on our grid, we're already having some challenges with that, especially in the spring. And what happens is there's a lot of solar during the day, so much so that the grid operator here in California tells those solar farms to shut down. And so that's what they call intermittency, right? You need something else to fill in the gaps of solar and wind. And traditionally in California, that's been natural gas. Natural gas power plants are more flexible than nuclear plants. So they've been asked to kind of fill in the gaps. And that's the question you're hearing debated here, whether it's going to be replaced with something like natural gas or with stuff like energy efficiency or energy storage, which is something like big batteries. And those would fill in the gaps of solar and
wind.
But
there's also a kind of debate about whether or not to trust PG&E, I think, that's implicit in what we're hearing here.
That is the big question mark for me as a reporter, right? This is not completely spelled out on paper, and we're going to have to see how this plays out. It's a commitment, but it's definitely not something that's completely laid out firmly by PG&E.
David Moglen, you want to say
something? Yeah, I want to come back because I think something that's really missing from our conversation is that green energy has advanced extraordinarily rapidly now, and that what we have to understand is that energy storage, which, for example, in the German renewables industry is known as the holy grail of renewable energy, has advanced extremely rapidly. And what that means is that the so-called intermittency problem of if the sun isn't out or the wind isn't blowing is being solved, and is being solved at a level and at a cost which now means that we can use renewables and efficiency twinned with energy storage.
Well, this is what I keep reading. Michael Schellenberg, you dispute that? I mean, these advances in renewables that he's talking about?
Well, I mean, look, there's been a first of all, I've been a champion of big investments in solar and wind for 20 years. Big argument for stimulus that we had, direct investment.
You're back with me in the early 90s.
Absolutely.
Making those arguments.
And we're doing – and it's great. But I'm for all sources of clean energy, and that includes nuclear. So why – look, Diablo Canyon produced about as much solar as the state of California produced. Why are, if you love solar, why do you want to wipe out all the gains that solar made in a fell swoop?
Right. Hold it there, because we're coming up on a break, and I want to bring our listeners into this discussion. I know many of you would like to weigh in here, and many of you have questions or comments, so let me invite you now to join the program, and you can join us whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us now by phone. Again, toll-free, you can do that at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and express your thoughts there or any questions you might have, kqed.org/forum. And you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. Many ways to communicate with us, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. Damon Moglen with us from Friends of the Earth. He's senior strategic advisor for them. Michael Schellenberger, president of the Environmental Progress Group, an environmental research and policy organization. He also is co-founder of the Breakthrough Institute. And Lauren Sommer, here with us in studio as well, science and environment reporter for KQED Public Radio. We welcome your involvement, so please feel free to become part of the program. Again, toll free 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. PG&E has agreed to close Diablo Canyon, California's last nuclear plant. Tuesday, it announced that in 2025 it would put an end to the state's nuclear era, and as part of an agreement with several environmental groups, PG&E says it plans to replace the power produced by Diablo Canyon with renewable energy sources rather than with fossil fuels. We have a whole debate going on here between Damon Moglen and Michael Schellenberger. Damon Moglen's senior strategic advisor with Friends of the Earth, and Michael Schellenberger's president of Environmental environmental progress. Lauren Sommer is with us as well, science and environmental reporter for KQED Public Radio, and you are welcome to join the program. Again, ways to communicate with us either by phone, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org. Or going to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. Let me bring our callers on. And Jack, you're first up here. Welcome. Oops. We got Jack on the air with us. Jack, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Sure. Hear you fine. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, so I just wanted to make a couple comments about kind of like perceived safety. For example, when you look and you add up all the deaths and all that from, let's say, mining and logging and all that kind of stuff to gather up fossil fuels versus nuclear, and also like all the radiation that's being spewed out even by natural gas as you burn it, compared to nuclear, which, yes, has had some pretty spectacular accidents, but when you look at like the land furrowed and like the actual cost of nuclear, especially since we're using one of the probably the worst ways to actually harness the energy from nuclear power, being the pressurized light water reactor, you know, I just think we're really making an emotional argument here and not looking into more advanced types of nuclear, like the molten salt reactors, et cetera. So I'm just hoping that some of your panel there would comment on that. Thanks.
Well, thank you for the call. We'll go to Damon Moglen on that. I haven't heard nuclear pronounced that way since President W., but go ahead, Damon.
Well, I think that we have to recognize that there are a series of additional costs in nuclear power, and we have to talk about those. And that, first of all, nuclear power creates absolutely catastrophic accidents. The price tag right now on Fukushima is over $250 billion in damages, for example. In addition, I think we need to be talking about nuclear waste, which I think nobody wants to talk about. The notion that nuclear is clean is ridiculous. Nuclear is not clean. It's producing a waste form that is going to be a deadly radioactive poison that we have to isolate from the environment and from human beings for thousands of years. And at what cost? And after 50 years, we still have no idea how to deal with it. I think we also have to recognize that there is an inextricable linkage between nuclear power and nuclear weapons. The fact is that light water reactors in their spent fuel contain about 1% plutonium. That's the primary, most sought-after nuclear weapons fuel. And in addition, in a world in which terrorism is increasingly a reality, the fact is that nuclear plants, nuclear facilities, nuclear transports become targets. And I think these are additional costs. And that's why people just think nuclear is not worth it, and we have a better mousetrap. It's called renewable energy efficiency and energy storage, and it can do all of what Diablo has done, but cleaner, safer, and at a cheaper cost.
Well, let's hear from Michael Schellenberg on this, although I ought to add, Michael, as you well know, the whole argument against nuclear power has been nuclear waste and what to do with it.
I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, look, you have to remember the Sierra Club was pro-nuclear in the mid-60s. Why? Because zero air pollution comes out of nuclear power plants, zero water pollution, unless you want to count hot, clean water, which I don't. That's why the Sierra Club liked it. It has a super small land footprint. To replace Diablo Canyon with solar, you need 100 times more land. You need to pave an area the size of San Francisco. So Damon earlier attacked my funder, Rachel and Roland Pritzker, which has absolutely no financial conflicts of interest, in contrast to Damon's partners at NRDC. The quote he cited about Fukushima is the view of the World Health Organization. So Damon's organization thinks that there's a conspiracy within the World Health Organization to cover up deaths from Chernobyl and Fukushima. It's a conspiracy theory.
Do you believe that? Would you comment on that, David Moglen?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a situation in which the Atomic Energy Agency, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is the UN body responsible for nuclear, actually is pledged to promoting nuclear. This is a classic problem that we have to face, which is that many of the regulatory bodies and safeguards bodies, in fact, are pledged to promoting nuclear. And that's the real conflict of interest. The fact of the matter is that, unfortunately, at the UN level, there has been a real effort to kind of say that nuclear is not problematic. And I think that that has really not been to the public's benefit at all. You cannot have a watchdog safeguards agency who in its initial pledging is saying we're pledged to promoting the very thing we're supposed to be safeguarding.
Let me bring it back to California, though, for a moment, because Lauren Sommer, we heard from the head of PG&E that really California policies are driving the closing of Diablo Canyon.
Yeah, I mean, what they said was they essentially won't need Diablo Canyon anymore for a couple reasons. One, energy efficiency, and we have a very strong goal in the state to double energy efficiency in buildings by 2030, so they won't have to deliver as much power to customers. More of that power has to come from renewables. That's also a state policy. And then PG&E is also facing community choice aggregation kind of groups. We've got one in Marin and Sonoma where customers are actually leaving PG&E to start up their own essential little utilities buying their own power, so they're losing customers. So they said when you look at all those factors, if you had to run Diablo Canyon at a lower capacity, the power gets very expensive, is what they said. They can't run it at half capacity because then they're still paying most of the cost of running the whole plant.
Now, how does this affect their shareholders? Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, I think this will all come down to costs, and this will all come out when they come before the CPUC, right? Because they do recoup profits on a lot of their investments, right? So they haven't spelled out how they're going to recoup the costs on some of these things that are going forward. But I guess one more thing I just wanted to bring up quickly and putting California in context, you know, we're seeing this debate nationwide. There's about a dozen plants that are also looking at shutting down before the end of their useful life, as maybe it would be described. And this is a really kind of new way of that the nuclear debate is coming into our public consciousness, right? I mean, we remember this from the 60s and 70s, these kind of issues. But now we're seeing climate change and greenhouse gases kind of reshape this debate. And just a few weeks ago, we had the U.S. Energy Secretary saying he was very concerned about nuclear plants, these older nuclear plants shutting down, because you have the Clean Power Plan, which is a plan where states have to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. And you have an international agreement, the Paris Agreement from last year, where the U.S. is committing to cut emissions. And he was very concerned about the country meeting those commitments without all these nuclear plants. So while you're seeing so much contention about this one plant in California, it's in part of this larger national debate right now about where we get energy
from. It's a big picture. It's a global picture, really, especially with climate change part of the equation. But let me go back to Michael Schellenberger, and then I want to go to more of your callers and just get some response to some listener comments here from you, Michael. For example, Tracy says, how much money is set aside for long-term storage of waste? My heart of hearts and my head say that all nuclear plants should be closed. The waste storage problem will never be solved. That is the big, dirty secret. And Tina goes on to say, isn't Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant sitting on a fault line? And how can we responsibly keep it open when the risk to California, the United States, and our oceans is so great? These are the two arguments, essentially, you hear about closing the plant. Mm-hmm. That is, on the one hand, what about the storage of the waste? I mean, two arguments among a myriad number of arguments. And the other one, the fault line.
Yeah, I mean, let's deal with it. This is a proposal that will shut down our largest source of clean energy 50 years before it needs to. So what that means is 50 years less of money put into a fund to decommission the site, to benefit the workers. So we're going to basically we're going to lose our biggest source of clean energy if Damon and his group gets their way. We're also going to have less funding for dealing with what's called spent fuel. So let me clarify something about this. The waste, the so-called waste produced by nuclear power plants is just spent fuel. It's fuel that will be used in next generation reactors in the latter half of this century. There's not a lot of disagreement about that. It's the best kind of waste that any way of making electricity produces. Why? Because there's so little of it, it's incredibly easy to contain and manage safely, and it never hurts anybody. This is just fear-mongering that comes out of Friends of the
Earth.
Does that
include the concern about terrorists taking over Diablo Canyon?
Oh, give me a break. I mean, why do terrorists keep blowing up, like, you know, shopping malls? And why do they gun people down? But they couldn't get into that plant. And what would they do if they got there? I mean, people kind of go, they break into a nuclear power plant, and what is inside? It's this way that Damon and his group tried to conflate. And then what are they going to do? They're going to go into the – let me just get this straight. They're going to break in. They're going to get the plutonium. They're going to escape on their supersonic jet to their bat hideaway.
Michael, can I
and
bring
make
this
a
conversation
bomb
back to reality?
Yeah,
to reality? Because, for example, a claim that's just made about using spent fuel as reactor fuel, that's ridiculous. There's not a single commercial breeder reactor operating in the world. The European reprocessing industry, which was based on trying to fabricate fuel from spent fuel, has collapsed. And here in the United States – spent fuel is deadly nuclear waste. And the only thing we get out of it.
Who's died? You said deadly, right? So who's it killed? You just know, can you name somebody or is there some study or something?
Are you going to deny that the radiation coming from spent fuel is dangerous, Michael?
No, you said deadly. So you said that the radiation waste has killed people. Who did it kill?
If we had a spent fuel element in this room with us, we would all receive
a
mortal
dose of
radiation.
I'm
going to break in here because I want to get lots of callers on, as many as I can. We go to Saratoga. Venkat, you're on.
Yeah, we all agree that we need clean energy. And I find it actually shocking to say that we're going to replace nuclear first. It makes no sense at all. Because you need base power to run, you know, to meet the energy requirements across the state. Obviously, gas is the only one that can come up and go, and that's actually polluting. So why not actually start with replacing those with clean energy first? Second comment, as part of the Paris Agreement and post-Paris Agreement, we're recommending to countries, and we're in fact selling technologies for India to build 5 nuclear power plants. So something about this whole argument is completely backwards. The only comment I would say, you know, against that person who's talking in support of nuclear, I wouldn't do this just because, you know, I'm going to keep 1,500 more people employed. That's not the goal here. The goal is purely energy. And I think the first order of business, you know, to keep growing with clean energy is not to take nuclear power off. It should really be replacing gas and coal, because you're also importing from other states, and which we don't have much control over. Thank you.
Venkat, thank you for the call. Let me let that stand as an editorial comment. I want to get to as many calls of your calls as I can. Sam joins us next. Sam, welcome.
Hello. Yes, thanks for discussing this important topic. My concern is that this question about the renewable energy and replacing nuclear power with possibly natural gas in part, you know, all of that obviously is in a large part related to the issue of climate change and the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But one of the factors that doesn't get much attention in the issue of climate change is population growth. As you probably know, the population of California is projected to grow quite a bit in the next few decades, and the population of the whole planet is projected to grow from where it is now, 7 billion approximately, to 9 billion. That's more than a 20% increase. And obviously that will have an increase in energy use as well as use of other natural resources, which will cause quite a problem for the climate. And that's something I would hope, Michael, you will have some panelists to discuss at some other point, because I don't see very much attention to that. So I would be interested in your panelists' comments on that.
Well, we thank you for that. And we have been giving, as our listeners well know, a lot of attention to climate change, and we'll doubtless give more. But Michael Schellenberg, you want to respond to the caller?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think that, well, first of all, I think there's an important nuclear linkage that I really only understood after I started to study the history of Diablo Canyon. Why did the Sierra Club change its mind on nuclear in the late 60s? Well, it's a really interesting story. It was a set of the leaders of the club that were worried about immigrants and other people coming into California and ruining its scenic quality. So what was their strategy to slow or reduce economic growth and development? It was to stop and fight power plants. It wasn't even specific to nuclear. It just so happened that PG&E had a proposal to build nuclear. This is all documented in beautiful histories of that period. When they were very clear about this, they said, we have to find something, because of course it's not very popular to say we want to slow economic growth. They said, we have to tap into something more emotional, something more powerful that will scare people. And they deliberately preyed on public misunderstandings of radiation, public conflations of nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. They deliberately went about it, and they admitted to it later, confusing the public about what nuclear energy was. And
so, comment on this history, Damon Moglen?
Well, you know, I actually what I want to talk about is what we're talking about here and about energy. You know, there's a bogeyman in the room right now, which is that this proposal is suggesting that we can replace the necessary power from Diablo using renewables, efficiency, and energy storage. Nobody is talking about using gas. My organization is completely against that, and this agreement is completely against that. And that is not the intention here. And there's been a lot of bogeyman talk here that somehow that's part of this agreement. That's not part of this agreement. That is the exact opposite of this agreement. This agreement is a blueprint for how do you shut down dirty fossil fuel plants and dirty and dangerous nuclear plants and replace them with renewable energy, energy efficiency, and energy storage.
Another boogeyman and all that, though, and that's Lawrence Sumner again, the concern about trusting PG&E, whatever their commitments may be.
Yeah, and I think the question maybe for Damon, for me as a reporter too, is, you know, the grid operator is different from PG&E. Yes. And on a day-to-day basis, they have to fill in gaps of solar and wind because they have to keep our power grid functioning. So I think there's no guarantees here. Maybe that's the issue that I've been pointing to, right? I mean, certainly the plan is for one thing, but on a day-to-day basis, maybe we won't quite know what happens.
Well, I think what's very important here is that this is a proposal which is suggesting that the PUC will have to decide how and if to implement this agreement. And in its implementation, it's not PG&E that's going to wind up owning these renewable resources. They're procuring renewable energy. So, you know, we're going to have a full public transparent debate about this. And in so doing, I think Californians are going to have a tremendous opportunity to participate in the history of building a green, clean energy environment and proving that we can do it to the rest of the world.
And I want to bring in more of our callers. Let me go next to Neil, who's joining us from Alberta. Neil, you're on. Morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, what I want to know is what's wrong with the thorium liquid salt reactor? I've looked it up a bit on the internet, and I can't find anything wrong with it. It's safe, clean, and cheap.
Okay, whenever energy comes up, somebody mentions thorium. Lauren, if you want to weigh in here.
I can address it. I mean, I went to China last December with the climate scientist James Hansen and engineers from MIT and UC Berkeley, all of us very concerned about climate and wanting to see what the Chinese have been doing. Bill Gates has got a big investment in two different reactors, one of which uses the spent fuel, the so-called waste, as fuel. The other one is in a thorium molten salt reactor, and they're amazing designs. It'll be incremental. I mean, I think that the ones – they'll come online sometime in 2030, 2040. They are passively safe. But I mean, look, it's like when you have a technology that, like, outside of the 50 firefighters that died at Chernobyl and outside of basically nobody that dies at Fukushima from the radiation, you have a technology that basically doesn't hurt anybody. And so how do you make it much safer? What it really does is it scares people. But it doesn't – it's not doing that because of the technology. It's Damon's group. It's Greenpeace. It's Sierra Club that scares people. And so what happens is you get panic. You get depression. So read the World Health Organization on both Chernobyl and Fukushima, and all of the deaths, all of the significant deaths after those accidents are from panicked evacuations, from psychological distress. So there's real harm that gets created by this fear-mongering that Damon really
says. Well, here's someone on your side. I just want to read a comment from Randy who says, we should be building more nuclear plants, not less. Next-generation plants are more responsive than the older light-water reactors, so the baseload responsiveness can be addressed. However, if we can gain all those efficiencies and keep Diablo Canyon at the same time, we'd just be farther ahead. Instead, you plan to replace it. Reminds me of stupid accounting insanity. Keep Diablo Canyon. But here's a question from Matthew. Seems to me a reasonable question. He says, is there a way that you can slowly ramp down the energy of the nuclear plant while turning up potential renewable energy but maintain the ability to ramp the nuclear power back up should the expected renewable energy not seem some sort of energy agreement, thus ensuring that the energy lost by Diablo Canyon is replaced with renewables?
I mean, the question
Michael,
is,
can I
Michael,
come back?
Why would
I'd
you
like
want
to come back.
I mean,
I'd like to come back.
We're both
talking
at the same time. Let Damon go
Thank
ahead.
Thank you. I want to come back to the caller's question about the so-called liquid thorium reactor. And the major reason he can't find a problem is because none exists. We do not have a commercial reactor operating like that. This is a fantasy design. And this is really akin, I feel, to climate denialism because we are distracted by theoretical design reactors from the real business now of addressing climate change now. And the way to address climate change now is by ramping up renewables, efficiency, and energy storage. Talk about theoretical design in decades. That means my children, my grandchildren have to live with catastrophic climate change because we do nothing now. And that's
unacceptable. You mentioned climate denial here and your children and grandchildren. Michael talks about anti-vax and children and grandchildren. I mean, we brought this really to a kind of
– I mean, but like just look at like what he's saying. I mean, the Orwellianness of it. In other words, we could go put another 2,000 gigawatt hours of solar on the grid today. It would be awesome. We'd have more clean energy. But that's not what Damon wants to do. He wants to remove 8% of our electricity that is 100% clean energy. And then he goes and talks about climate change. Can I finish, please? It's audacious what you're saying.
Let's remove an energy revolution. May I finish my sentence?
But you say let's remove 23% of California's clean energy for the climate.
Every time you give a number, you increase your number.
May I finish? 23% of our clean energy is what you want to get rid of, and you're saying we should get rid of it for the climate. I mean, just pause for a minute. Everything that Damon wants in terms of renewables, I want. I've been advocating for 20 years.
Your numbers are twisted, I think.
23% is not right?
I mean,
wait, 23% is not right?
You know,
those are like California data, man.
Okay, well, your numbers are twisted.
I would love for you to respond to my numbers, Damon. You are just welcome to.
Okay.
Well, let me go to more callers. Jeff, you're on.
Yes, good morning. Country of France gets 90% of their power from nuclear energy.
85.
And why couldn't we move, relocate the Diablo Canyon plant to...
To France?
Oh, no. Away from the fault line.
Actually, was this proposed at all, Lauren? Moving Diablo Canyon?
It's not one I've heard.
Maybe we could sell it.
Why would you want to? I mean, look, here's this amazing plant. I went to Fukushima because I actually feel like it's my moral obligation as someone that cares about nuclear. I went there. And what Damon quoted is what the World Health Organization says, what radiation scientists says. It's at the levels of my hometown in the vast majority of that area. I'm from Greeley, Colorado.
Do you have 119
May I finish my sentence? So what happened when I went, I met with the most critical nuclear inspectors I've ever met, a guy that actually really hates many of the nuclear plants in Japan. And I asked him, I said, well, what about Diablo Canyon? What do you think of that plant? And without missing a beat, he goes, that's a great plant. And I was like, why? And he goes, because the workers there care so much. Well, they care and they keep that plant running better than almost any other power plant in the world. It's just, frankly, the way that we've treated these people, the disrespectful way we've treated them, the fear-mongering, we don't do it with anybody else. We don't treat our doctors that provide our vaccinations that way. We don't treat our healers
that way. An interesting time. Let me give the floor over back to Damon Moglen.
I think it's interesting to note that the unions representing workers at Diablo Canyon are part of this agreement and actually are very proud of the really quite historic package that they are trying to offer to retain workers, retrain workers, and also to deal with the community, which is that the loss of this plant ultimately is going to have an impact on the tax base. And they're trying to work with the community. All too often what happens around our country is plants close down and people in the community are mistreated. And that's not what this agreement is talking about.
We're talking about taking these workers, though, and putting them into not necessarily fracking jobs like Michael was talking about before, but also working with renewables. I remember we heard a lot about that from former Vice President Gore. And, you know, one does think of Solyndra and some of those disasters that occurred because there weren't necessarily the jobs, in other words, the transformative jobs, the environmental jobs that were supposed to be guaranteed by that. But I want to go actually to another question from a listener who brings up, I think, a point that maybe gets us back to the global picture. But Erwin wants to know, what about denuclearization in Germany? We've been talking a lot about France, but he says, my understanding is that in the short term, it has resulted in a normal reliance on dirty coal power.
Well, and we have a massive ramp up of renewables. So, for example, on a sunny day, you're getting all of the electricity needed to be used in Germany is being produced by solar. So you have a tremendous ramp up of renewables and major breakthroughs in energy storage and efficiency. So the European situation is very much a proof that we can make this work.
Look at what he just did there. Germany's emissions have gone up since 2011. They went up last year because Damon's colleagues in Germany, like him, care more about their superstitious views of nuclear than they do about climate change. So
hold that thought because I want to get to some more callers. Let me get Christian on next. Christian, you're on. Thanks for waiting.
Hi there. I've got a question for all the panelists about how clean nuclear energy actually is. That term's been used at least a dozen times in this conversation. But if you look at nuclear power from cradle to grave, there are massive releases of CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. And also the energy return on the energy invested in nuclear energy is lower than wind energy, which is considerably lower than natural gas and fossil fuels. And
that's I thank you for that. Let me go to Lauren on this. Lauren Sommer, we often hear that nuclear has its downside in emitting greenhouse gases. Can you shed some light for us on
that? Yeah, I mean, certainly you have to build a nuclear power plant, right? You have to put concrete and a lot of resources into it. There's definitely impacts with building them. You know, it's not completely carbon-free. When we're talking about it running, that's a little bit different when you think about a smokestack coming out of a coal plant or a natural gas plant. But I think one more piece of information for listeners. We can't build new nuclear plants in this state right now because Governor Jerry Brown, the first time he was governor, put a law on the book, said that we can't build them until there's a long-term solution for the waste. And it's important to remind people that long-term solution, which was thought of at Yucca Mountain in Nevada, that's completely stalled in Congress. So right now, every nuclear plant in this country is keeping it on site, and there isn't really a clear path with what to do with this stuff right now. And that's the big kind of sticking point still, as we're hearing.
That remains a conundrum. I agree. And let me get Ruthann on next. Ruthann, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi there. I wanted to ask all of the guests their thoughts on when you're talking about costs, et cetera, and so forth, if some of the decommissioning or replacement and all of that, if the costs should fall on the shareholders for PG&E as opposed to the ratepayers.
I can answer that and just address really quickly. They pay a very small – everybody, when you're paying for nuclear power, you're already paying that decommissioning fund, so it goes into a fund. So that's really easy to understand. The second thing is that the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which looks at the full life cycle and carbon emissions, finds that nuclear has lower carbon emissions than solar. Don't take my word for it. Just look it up online. And then the third point is just – yeah, we store the waste on site. We do a good job watching it. Damon's group and other environmental groups like Greenpeace and Sierra Club are the ones blocking long-term storage of nuclear waste.
We're doing a terrible job at storing nuclear waste on our reactor sites. At the California reactor sites, most of that waste has been in pools. In pools, what effectively are swimming pools, not in casks. So one of the things also that this agreement is talking about is immediately getting that fuel out of the pools as quickly as we can, because the situation is very dangerous with having all of that irradiated fuel in the pools.
We're going to have to let it stand there. I just want to end with a question, put it out as a rhetorical question from Sean. It says, why does transitioning to clean energy always have to be such a game of smoke and mirrors? It sounds like PG&E's plan to replace nuclear with renewables is padded with fluffy aspirations but few hard commitments. If we really want a clean energy future, we first need a clean policymaking process. PG&E and the PUC need to be far more open and transparent. Good place probably to end. Thank you, Michael Schellenberg. Thank you, Damon Moglen. And thank you, Lauren Sommer. And thank you, our listeners. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Judy Campbell, and Jeremy Siegel. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupine. We get online support from Amanda Font. We're going to talk about the presidential campaign and meet Valerie Jarrett in the hour ahead.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.